numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Friday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeart Radio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM Channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin, everybody. Calais by the line.
Hey, yo. How we doing?
On your television screen. What's happening?
Not much, man.
You good?
Not much. Just trying to watch the U.S. Open in the reflection of the screen because we can't get it on in the studio.
Oh, we can't?
No.
Why?
No, no.
Oh, because golf TV networking things?
Usually they don't switch it up from like round one to round two, but they did. They did today. So we're like Peacock for a long time and then into USA, or no, into NBC.
Guys, if we have four TVs up there, if you could put golf on three and then give me Raducanu and Zheng Xinwen on the fourth TV for reasons that I don't have to communicate.
I think you can put them on all four because we can't get golf on.
Reasons I don't have to communicate. On the show here, Jensen Lewis, co-host of By the Books, is going to join us here momentarily to talk College World Series. Let's just do it game by game. What does he think? Where are the bets for all of the first games, bracket one and bracket two? By the way, yesterday at the end of the show, I was convinced it was Friday. I'm like, oh, these games are tonight. And I was like, oh, it's Thursday. Kelly and I are in a text argument. I'm like, what are you talking about? These games are tonight.
And the most important thing was that JVT and Stormy rolled with the punches. So
they were like, what's wrong with this guy? It is tonight, though, where it starts. Two games tonight in bracket one, and then tomorrow it resumes. We'll get Jensen's thoughts on that, who he has got to win it all. If his pre-flop bets have all gone by the wayside, we'll find out. Paul Carr making up soccer tournaments now to bet on. These are just random international soccer tournaments.
It is wild because we get the Club World Cup one we're going to discuss, makes a lot of sense.
Yes, it does.
But like at the same time, I'm thinking the same thing. We're just coming up with more soccer for these guys.
When he said it to me, I'm like, come on, you're just making this up now at this point. Nick Whalen from Prop Points here at VSiN. Kelly really dug deep on the guest today. He's like, let's see what VSiN shows. Who can we get on here? So Nick Whalen will join us at Prop Points. We'll talk NFL and NBA with him. Coming up, are we sure? Estamos seguros? Because we didn't finish that yesterday. And then it's hour number two. Now, usually it's Fezzik and Felica, hour number two. We will have, by the way, Stormy and JVT live from Omaha once again at the end of our show just before they do money moves at the top of the hour. Felica will join us. Felica's got golf thoughts on the second round. Hopefully we get him before some guys have teed off and we have some bets for today. NFL win totals as well. He'd like to chime in on that. So we're not going to stop him from doing that. The Fezzik thing is the reason Fezzik's not here today.
A Wimbledon bet from Felica as well.
Oh, Wimbledon. Oh. Let me guess. It's not Iga.
Nope.
Fezzik's not here because you know what Fezzik is doing this week? Can I tell his personal business?
Yeah.
Can I just bring our group text exchange
forgot.
To life?
You already told me.
He took his 14-year-old son to New York City for a summer internship at a big Wall Street firm. So Fezzik is obsessed with this. So because he wants his kid to make lots of money, you know, by the age of 21, for God's sakes. And so in the group exchange, I quoted, I was acting like I was his son, and I said, but Dad, why should I go work for a big Wall Street firm when I can just try to chintz casinos out of $10 a day like you do? he didn't really appreciate that. I don't think. Last night.
It's a do as I say, not as I do situation.
Dad,
okay?
This seems like a poor use of my time.
I think it's a great idea by Steve. But yes, it's very much a do as I say, not as I do.
That's right. By the way, U.S. Open leaderboard, J.J. Spaun is yet to tee off this morning. He remains the leader in the clubhouse, 4 under par. He was the first round leader, despite at one point, I think it was Sungjae Im who passed him. But then Sungjae gave some strokes back, so J.J. Spaun remains at 4 under.
I think he tied him. I don't think he ever passed him.
Oh, I thought he got to 5 under, sir.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, I thought it was Friday yesterday, so.
Yeah, he did.
I could be wrong. Oh, he did get to 5 under, right? I was right? Yeah? He got to 5 under?
No, you did say it was Friday.
Oh, no,
yesterday.
That I did say, yeah. Thurston Lawrence. One stroke back at 3 under. The big mover. By the way, I don't have this updated. Is this updating properly for me? I don't know. Victor Hovland just eagled something, right?
Yeah.
My leaderboard is not at all.
No, mine's doing the same thing.
Yeah, it's not at all caught up. But essentially, Victor Hovland is the low round thus far for the day. I believe he's 4 under for the day and 1 shot back.
Yep.
So he's the big mover. And Scotty, last I checked, even par through 6 on the day. I tried doing today what I did at the Masters. The Masters this year was my most lucrative golf tournament ever, where I took Rory after the first round to win it, and Rory low round for the second round, and both ended up cashing. I didn't take Scheffler to win because the Scheffler tax has just been ridiculous.
It's silly.
So it doesn't matter how many strokes this guy is behind the lead. You're just not getting a good bang for your buck to win it. But I did play him low round today at 16.5 to 1, plus 1650. But so far, that ain't happening.
I mean, I like that bet, though, where, like, instead of... Like, I know people are still considering jumping in on Scotty, like, as an outright, but, like, he's right up against, like, the cut line at this point. Like, you are really gambling for to get a 6-to-1 ticket in when,
yeah.
I mean, he could easily have not even that bad of a day at Oakmont. He could shoot three over and miss the cut. So, I really, like, it's...
I just took a flyer on it.
Me and you were texting about it. Like, I just... The Scotty tax is so steep at this point. If you were going to make a bet on Scotty, I would do exactly what you did today. I didn't do it, but I think that's a really smart way to bet it because you're betting on the high side result.
You're going
to
do it, go for broke.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Last night, the big news, of course, Stanley Cup Final, Game 4 at Sunrise, with Florida leading the Oilers heading in 2-1 in the best of 7. And Florida goes out to a 3-0 lead in the first period. They dominated the first period. Edmonton couldn't stay out of the penalty box. Florida cashes in on a 5-on-3. Then they have the your garden variety power play goal to make it 2-0. They add a third. And at that point, you're like, well, this not only is this game looking like it's over, but the series looks like it's over. But they play three periods. And I don't know what Corey Perry, 40-year-old in his 20th NHL season, said in the locker room after the first period to his teammates. But whatever he said, whatever that come to Jesus speech was, it helped. Because the Oilers then put up 3 in the second period and knotted up at 3 apiece. They eventually go ahead 4-3. And then Florida scores with 19 seconds left in regulation to force overtime. The third overtime in 4 Stanley Cup final games. It is hard. It's going to be hard to sort of not put this series up. If this continues, it's going to be hard to not put this series up with some of the greats of all time. And you know how it ends. You figure at that point, maybe, oh, Florida, maybe they win this in overtime after all, despite this amazing comeback. By the way, the Oilers, as high as about 13-1 or 12-1 when they were down 3-0. I did not have the onions to bet that.
Me either.
Though I have bet the Oilers to success down 2 earlier in this postseason at like plus 550, but I didn't do it last night.
I thought about it for a quick second. Gil,
I thought about it for 0.75 seconds, not even a quick second.
I feel like whenever me and you watch hockey, that's what I'm always just looking to live
bet. That's
like,
all I'm doing.
Like, I didn't do anything pregame, so I thought about it for 1 second, and I was like, nah, this is too many goals, no.
Anyway, overtime, Leon Draisaitl does it again. By the way, Florida dominated the overtime period, and then Draisaitl ends up with a fairly cheap goal.
Is that the word for it?
He hits it off Nico Mikulin and passed Bobrovsky 5-hole. Ball game, as they say, in every sport except hockey.
I mean, look, there were a lot of gorgeous goals in that game.
Yeah, that wasn't one of them.
Like, I don't know how, like, big-time hockey fans feel, but I'm like, is that kind of like a cheap way to end the game? Like, it was just kind of like it's the way I always suggest they play hockey. Just throw something at the net and see what happens.
There was a guy who used to be on Sports Talk Radio in D.C. when I was a kid in the 80s, Ken Beatrice. And when the Caps were in their fledgling years, he always used to scream in the radio. He goes, just shoot the puck. Just shoot the puck. Because so many random things happen when the puck bounces off.
That's what Draisaitl did. It was like one-handed. Like, let me just flop it over there.
Well, and Draisaitl gets the winning goal. So we're knotted up at 2 apiece. And now it's a best of 3, de facto best of 3. The series is a coin flip at -110. Edmonton's got home ice in games 5 and potentially 7. And Conn Smythe, I said it with Jay Conn earlier this week, and I have a 9-1 ticket on Draisaitl to win Conn Smythe. Not nearly as big of a bang for your buck as others do, by the way. But I made it again because I was mad at myself for not following my conviction that I thought the Oilers could win this whole thing in the first round. I didn't do that, so I was like, well, Draisaitl's still 9-1. Still seems like a good bet. Well, it finally crashed yesterday after this fourth record-breaking overtime goal in the playoffs. Now, only Sam Bennett of the Panthers, again, this will be dependent on who wins this series ultimately, but only Sam Bennett with his 14 goals this playoffs, is shorter at plus 150. Draisaitl now moves a tick ahead of Connor McDavid. Draisaitl's plus 250, now having set the record for overtime goals in the playoffs. Connor McDavid 3-1. Everybody else, including all the goaltenders now, all in double digits and beyond, including triple digits for some. So that's it. By the way, the other thing that happened yesterday is the Oilers pulled Stuart Skinner. You and I say this. There's other people who know hockey better than we do. I didn't even think he was that bad. Like, one was a 5-on-3, one was a power play. But whatever, you know, the decision worked. The decision worked, and Calvin Pickard played great. I still don't think there is nary a goaltender, Bobrovsky, Pickard, or anybody who's going to win the Conn Smythe. I kind of think it's down to three now. I really do. I think it's down to Bennett on the Florida side, and I think it's down to Draisaitl or McDavid. And the reason that I include McDavid, despite having the Draisaitl ticket and having strong conviction that, my God, if you're setting a record for overtime goals in a postseason, that this should be yours if your team wins the Cup. But I say that with a little bit of hesitation, as I think everyone with a Draisaitl ticket still should, which is, yeah, but if Connor McDavid scores the game-winning goal in Game 7, where he has just fabulous stick work and jukes two dudes and puts the biscuit in the basket, watch them vote him for Conn Smythe.
God, I wish he scored that goal. That was about as sick of move as I've ever seen in a hockey game last night. Just couldn't pay it off. What was Tkachuk yesterday? Because Bobrovsky plummets all the way down to 75-1 after being in single digits.
Well, none of these guys are having a great goaltending playoffs. Both of the Oilers' goaltenders are like lower than .900 save percentage. So I think Bobrovsky's .912. .896 and .892, I think, respectively, for the Oilers' goaltenders in this. Despite Pickard being 7-0 in the playoffs. We'll come back. NBA talk. Are we sure it's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network?
The Sports Betting Network.
Back to the numbers game, live from Circa Sports, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, what's happening? We get tweets. I just want to read this one right here, Kelly. Coach Brian, this is pretty much my feelings on Conn Smythe. He says, I'm sitting on a Bennett 30-1 ticket and a Draisaitl 8-1 ticket, thanks to VSiN. I'm eating my fingernails for the next three games, hoping Connor McJesus does not go into legend mode.
What could possibly go wrong?
I go back to what I said last segment, which is, that's all it's going to take. That's what I'm worried about. Like, really, if he just puts in some huge goal in Game 7 with some highlight reel play, that's the end of that. Yeah. I just feel like that's how we'll get.
I also think that we are I'm going to go with 90% down to those final three that you just listed. But, yeah. Oh, man, these odds swings are wild. We were just looking at that. Bobrovsky, one bad game. He's out of it completely. Tkachuk scores a couple goals. Moves from 100-1 yesterday. Danny and Savannah found in the back. 100-1 now down to 10-1.
Yeah, he scored the first two goals yesterday. But, I mean, Bennett has 14 goals in the playoffs. By the way, between Draisaitl and McDavid, just because you were wondering, 32 points apiece now in the playoffs. They're tied. Draisaitl 11-6 in goals. McDavid 26-21 in assists. Draisaitl 10-8 in plus minus. You have any second round U.S. Open plays?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do have a couple of second round matchups. I added a top 10 on Victor Hovland. VSiN.com, by the way, we are doing recaps for the U.S. Open every single day. Myself, Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, Matt Eumanns putting in thoughts, bets in there. So I put in Hovland top 20, top 10 in there. I talked about yesterday. Also brought up the Siwoo Kim top 10 bet we were discussing yesterday. Added those for finishing positions. And then second round matchups, Taylor Pendrith over JJ Spahn. Tip of the cap to Chris Felica, actually. He sent that one in. I was like, oh, that looks like a good one. And then Siwoo Kim over Ben Griffin today.
How about Brooks Koepka's round so far today? 3 birdies and 4 bogeys through 10. 1 over.
It is. I just hope he. I mean, he should be. I hope he is a story all weekend, Gil. Like, yeah. It is. Okay, Jordan. Real quick, Jensen. Sorry, I know you're hanging by. Jordan Spieth could not be more annoying yesterday. He was classic Jordan Spieth, complaining, whining about everything, and then you get Brooks Koepka. So I don't really know why I love Brooks, because he gets all salty with the media. Right, he's kind of annoying from that standpoint. I get it, but this guy had the balls. The balls to call Oakmont not that hard of a test before the tournament, Gil, when he's barely played well in the past 2 years, and then went out and did that yesterday. He backed up his bold statements beforehand. Brooks is just, he's kind of a king, man.
Management's in Omaha. You could scream about anything you want. Nothing can happen to you. What else you want to scream about? By the way, Scheffler won over now for the day through eight. That's done.
Spieth, man, they just love it. They bump out to break with Spieth just hot mic, and it's like, no, shut up. He's just complaining about everything.
Ladies and gentlemen, he's a co-host of By the Books, which precedes us each and every day here on the network, hosted by Captain America Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis. It's Jensen Lewis live from Omaha, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, Jensen?
We are good. A couple of jello shots deep for Dave and the boys and everyone back home. So I think a few people had, and Kelly can appreciate this, we had a couple of rookie mistakes from people going too hard, too fast, and it's not how you start, it's how you finish. So I plan on climbing the odds board tonight and finishing strong.
Just explain to me, how do we determine who the winner is? Everybody falls flat except for one person? Like, how is that determined in the end?
Last man standing, right? I mean, this is Survivor Omaha style, right?
That's right.
Is probably it. No, it's been good. It's been a lot of fun and just having everyone here, and I wish you guys could be here as well. First time to Omaha for me as well, and just taking it in. We are about to have the monsoon of LSU and Arkansas fans get here later today, so you will not be able to get a spot any of the establishments here probably this afternoon, well into this weekend.
All right, let's start with today's games in bracket one. Coastal Carolina, Arizona, and Oregon State, Louisville. Are those the two today, or are we in bracket two today?
I think
those are the two today. Yeah, those are the two today in bracket one. First of all, do you have any futures still alive?
I have an Arkansas. I feel like it's 650. I have to double check where they are right now. But I think what I would have loved to have had, and I should have probably done it when I saw their draw, was Coastal Carolina. And Gil, I think I remember you and I texting back and forth about, oh, okay, Florida was going to be one of those really popular teams to win that regional. In the back of my mind, I'm like, I really should have just gone back to, hey, great frontline starting pitching. They're at home. That's an offense that's suited really well for that ballpark. So that's the one that I have FOMO on, now down to six. I'm sure they were in the 30s at one point, but we'll see it. This first bracket, this left side of the bracket, if you will, very wide open with Coastal and Arizona, and obviously with Louisville and Oregon State.
Yeah, Coastal is the only one, Jensen, that I have any FOMO on. I didn't consider any of the other seven for even a moment. So Coastal is that for me. Do you have a play in any of those two first games tonight?
Yeah, we're going to go. And for people that are just jumping in here, Gil, on how a TD Ameritrade ballpark plays, it is very spacious, very similar to Kauffman Stadium for you Royals fans out there. So a lot of ground to track. And I got in on the under 9.5 yesterday, down to 9 in a lot of places here for Arizona and Coastal Carolina. Owen Krimkowski is going to go for Arizona in game one. I don't think he got out of the second inning in his first start on Friday against North Carolina in the Chapel Hill Super that I was covering. So I think a good bounce back spot. But I do respect where Coastal's frontline starting pitching is. I do feel they're going to be able to limit Arizona's offense too. So could see a very low scoring game, perhaps a 3-2, 5-3, somewhere in there. And for college standards, that's really low scoring. Same can be said, I think, for Louisville and Oregon State on the under 10 in that one. I haven't walked outside yet, guys, but traditionally, the wind, it will play not like a Wrigley Field factor here, but certainly if it's blowing out, that's something to factor in on the totals markets. But as of right now, everything looks pretty calm. So I do think that sticker shock of just getting on the field for the first time, do feel like pitching dominates here in day one.
Yeah, Coastal Carolina, by the way, out of the Sun Belt, got here by beating Auburn twice, two thrillers. Arizona took down North Carolina at Chapel Hill in two, really in the face of elimination, two games with the face of elimination, and get to the College World Series for the first time in the Chip Hale era. Louisville here beating Miami, Oregon State having beaten Kelly Bidlin's Fighting FSU Seminoles to get here. What about tomorrow? Murray State is the darling, if you will, of this bracket right now. And Murray State, by the way, Jensen, you and I talked about beforehand that prop, will a four seed get there? This is the one that cashed, right? Murray State did, in fact, get there as a four seed.
Remarkable, right, Gil? And yes, they are Cinderella alive and in living color here, but don't tell that to them or their potent offense. I think they are very live. I jumped on them on the money line yesterday, plus 210. I think they're down to plus 200 in a couple of spots, and it wouldn't shock me if that number goes further south here, just with some of the momentum and just really the matchup in general here, Gil. I think they match up extremely well against UCLA's pitching. I'd be fascinated to see where this game is late. No play on the total for me. Don't know if UCLA's offense is going to kind of trade punches here, but love the way Murray State is coming in swinging. They're a very confident bunch. I'm not getting in the way of this freight train right now. Let's go Racers, and let's see them pull a day one in their bracket upset as well.
Yeah, 2-1 dogs in the game against UCLA tomorrow. And then LSU Arkansas, what's the strategy here? Obviously, the only conference that's represented with two teams, they happen to play each other. Do you wait for the loser here and then jump on the loser?
Exactly. And again, another total play for me. Got under 10 yesterday. It dipped as low as 9 and then a little buyback here. I'd still advise the under 9.5. A boltload of power pitching here that's going to come at you left, right, center. And the atmosphere, guys, if you've seen plenty of SEC weekends, it's going to feel that way as far as football season goes. It's going to feel that way 30,000 strong. Here in Omaha. So you'll get to hear all calling the hogs. You'll get to hear all the LSU Tiger chants. So I think today those teams kind of get a feel of how the ballpark is playing. But again, a lot of swing and miss from both pitching staffs. So I think you could get a tightly contested match. But also, Gil, I'm with you on strategy. Whichever team ends up losing this one, I would say you could jump on them almost in a sense of if you don't like what the future price ends up being, I'd roll the money lines over because obviously it's double elimination, so they'd have to win out to be able to get to the College World Series final.
Yeah, so you can withstand one loss before you get to the best of three championship, if you will. So you could withstand two losses from now until the title, essentially. So just reviewing those first four games, the official play is on which one or which ones here?
Yeah, so we'll do four official plays. Under 9.5 in Arizona Coastal. We'll do under 10 in Louisville, Oregon State. Murray State on the money line, plus 210, and then the under 10 in LSU, Arkansas.
All right, what's your favorite? Can I trouble you for your favorite MLB play of the day, sir, since that is your bread and butter?
I would say I do like the Red Sox and the Diamondbacks today. I think the matchup there, Garrett Crochet, back-to-back starts here against New York. Think he'll be in a great spot. Wouldn't mind a little Paul Skene strikeout ladder today, a little matinee special against the Cubs offense. We'll kind of see how that plays out. But that's where I'm standing right now. Obviously, we'll have a boatload more to come here. Maybe one under two for you, Gil. Under in Rays and Mets, under 8. Good pitching matchup there, too. Taj Bradley and Clay Holmes. So I think a lot of action here on a very loaded MLB slate, too.
Jensen, I really appreciate it. We really appreciate it. As you look across at your VSiN cohorts, just before we go here in 10 seconds, who's the person you're looking across with the jello shots? You're like, that's the one I've got to beat.
I think Stormy is really kicking the tires and ready to light the fires once they sign off today. I think that's who I got to beat.
Stormy Bonatoni. Thank you, Jensen. Appreciate it. Jensen Lewis, everybody. Buy the books.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you're into futures, wagering, fantasy, or just like the thrill of calling your shot, you need to check out xcuta.com. That's X-C-U-T-T-A, and it's basically the future of how we play. Think of it like combining a live auction with the strategy of sports betting. You choose who you want to bid on, players, teams, golfers, even horse racing. Over 1,000 athletes and teams to choose from across every major sport. You set the terms, build your own auction, and invite your friends to play. You can even start auctions for free. It's like creating your own mini sportsbook, that is, with your crew, and it's addictively fun. Here's how you do it. You email support@xcuta.com, mention VSiN, and they'll send you a special 3-month player promo code to get started. Again, xcuta.com. I'll spell it X-C-U-T-T-A, like Calcutta, but xcuta. Futures wagering just got a serious upgrade. Gil Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlin. We've gone a half hour. We haven't even mentioned tonight game four of the National Basketball Association Finals, or as we like to call it here, or I'll just speak for myself, maybe the NBA championship game tonight.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you.
I mean,
me and you are on opposite sides, but I think we can agree on that point.
I think if Indiana wins it, clearly with a 3-1 edge, they're in the driver's seat and they're going to win this thing. I think if OKC wins it, it's, again, like hockey, back to a de facto best of three, and OKC's got all the advantage. I'm taking the points. You are laying the points.
No, I played the money line.
Oh, you played the money line. So we both can win.
Yeah, we can both win. That's right. Yeah. Thunder by 5. That sounds good.
Just let me say, if you missed it yesterday, my advice again, if you're thinking about betting the Pacers on the money line on the series, don't. I would say bet the money line on the game tonight. You get more bang for your buck. And the theory being that if the Pacers are going to win this series, it will be because they win tonight, not because they lose tonight and then somehow take 2 out of the last 3, which, again, is possible but not likely.
And, again, like yesterday, I'm with you on the same thing on the other side. If you're looking at the Thunder series, I would be concerned. I mean, as a Thunder backer, I am a Thunder backer. I've got Thunder money invested. I would be concerned if this goes to 7 games of Oklahoma City being able to hold serve at home in Game 7. At that point, I trust Rick Carlisle and Tyrese Halliburton more on the other side of the ball. So I would rather bet this at similar or better price Game 4 than bet the series price.
Let's bring Paul Carr in this. Paul Carr is here, of course, to give us some soccer plays. But he used to work at ESPN. Now, of course, he's at True Media Networks. He is the host of the Expected Value podcast. Comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. But he used to work over at ESPN, and he's got a great sense of media. How you doing, Paul? First of all, good morning to you, sir. What's happening?
I'm good. Soccer never stops, as we'll get to.
Yes, you're just making up tournaments. We know what you're doing.
They're doing a great job.
So I want to ask you about this. So we always are worried that we're not worried because we're betting, right? So betting is a different thing than mainstream sports talk radio. But we're always curious. At least I am, right? How close to the sun are we really? Like in our own world of betting, like does anybody outside of betting even care about any of this stuff? And I was looking at the ratings of the NBA Finals, and we are not surprisingly, we are down. Let me go Cronkite and take off the glasses here to make this serious. But this is Game 3 of the NBA Finals between the Pacers and Thunder averaged 9.19 million viewers on ABC. That is down nearly 20%. Ooh. 20% from the Celtics-Mavericks same game last year. As far as the three games themselves, the three-game average viewership, because they did have a tick up in Game 3, but it's still only 8.95 million viewers, which is down 23% from last year. And by the way, when you compare it to the other lowest rated NBA Finals series, which would be the 2007 Cavs-Spurs, that was 9.08 million through three games average. 2021 between the Suns and Bucks was 8.99. This is 8.95. Just again, by comparison, Super Bowl, 127 million. Watch the Super Bowl. I get it. It's one game. But football is king. Hockey's down too. Hockey last year, first three games. We don't have last night's yet. But the first three games last year, and it might have been ABC versus TNT and those affiliated networks. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a network change. But that's down from about 3+ million to 2+ million even. So I'm curious from your standpoint, you know, what are the suits at these networks thinking at this point? Like, what goes on behind the scenes? Are they just miserable about it, or they just throw their hands up in the air and they're like, whatever?
Yeah, I mean, something like this on the NBA specifically, you know it's coming. This is not a surprise once you have the finals matchup. So, you know, there's hand-wringing to a sense, but it's not anything you could do much about. But yeah, the issue becomes, you know, some of these, it's an advertising, it's a financial thing, obviously. Because some of the contracts have, you know, a guaranteed number of viewers. So if you don't get a certain mark, you have to make it good one way or the other, either financially or commercials at a different time or whatever it is. So yeah, it's just kind of it's just not fun. I mean, from a production standpoint, like those people in the truck and everything, you know, you're aware, but it doesn't impact your, you know, day to day all that much because, you know, you still have millions of people watching. It's still good work, fun work. But yeah, the suits are the ones where it's just kind of, they have to deal with it.
Yeah. And,
it's like something going wrong at your house. You know, something breaks and you're like, I got to call the plumber and stay home. You know, all that stuff, you just got to deal with. They got to do stuff like that. But from a business standpoint,
the make goods on the advertising revenue that, you know, one way or the other based on numbers, that's the interesting part. And then, you know, the betting handle, I'm sort of wondering, I'm taking a straw poll. I'm calling, you know, a few people behind the scenes or texting a few people like, okay, is your handle down? Because betting is a whole nother thing. You're like, well, you could still bet on it. Handle is down based on the few that I've talked to, which is
interest
also. That's an interesting thing too. I don't know if that's because OKC is such a huge favorite.
Yeah.
That could be part of it also, where people weren't inclined to jump in on the NBA side. Yeah.
It's gotta be
soccer's the same way.
Yeah. Soccer's the same way. Yeah.
Yeah. Just talking to friends who have these connections. I mean, in the international standpoint, you want the U.S. involved as long as possible because it's more eyeballs watching. It's more money coming in from a betting perspective. And even at the club standpoint, you know, you get your bigger clubs deeper in Champions League, more attention. It's just like every other sport in that sense.
Okay. Let's go to soccer. We have something called the Club World Cup, and then we have the Gold Cup. Gold Cup, I think we all remember. Explain, yeah. Well, first of all, explain what both of these are.
Yeah. Sometime ago, we should play like two truths and a lie with me giving you soccer tournaments.
That's right.
Which one of these things is not real? But both of these are real. So yeah, the Gold Cup is every 2 years. It is CONCACAF, which is North America and the Caribbean. It's the Continental Championship. So it's our equivalent of Euros or Copa America. And there's often an invited club, as we'll get to like this year, where they'll bring in another club from another confederation for various reasons, we'll just say. So that's what the U.S. is playing in. That starts tomorrow. The Club World Cup. Okay, so this has been going on in different edition since 2000, but it's always been this small tournament of about 7-8 teams played in December. No one really pays a whole lot of attention. It's basically the winner of each continental club championship. So you wait for Champions League, Copa Libertadores in South America, things like that.
Okay.
However.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, you go ahead. However.
Okay. As I say, so, but FIFA likes money. I have breaking news for you, Gil. FIFA likes money.
Write that down, Kelly.
Yeah. Right. Take notes. Money. So they expanded this Club World Cup to 32 teams, moved it to the summer, and put it in the United States, where they're hoping to fill, you know, large stadiums with lots of people paying lots of money for lots of tickets. And so now we have this, for the first time, expanded Club World Cup of 32 teams with more attention. You know, it's not overlapping with club seasons or anything like that. And so you've got 32 teams from around the world who qualified through various methods, winning continental championships, made up FIFA rankings, things like that. And they're competing in a World Cup style tournament with groups, knockout stage, etc. here in the U.S. And it starts tomorrow.
All right. And the U.S. traditionally doesn't do well in this. Why?
So in the Club World Cup, the U.S., I believe, has only had one team win because they don't win the Continental Championship very much. It's usually a Mexican club that does that. So Seattle is the only one that has won the CONCACAF Club Championship in recent years. And they were in the Club World Cup, 3 years ago, I think, and they lost in their first game. So, you know, a lot of it's just matching up against better teams or teams that are even. But there are a handful of U.S. teams and MLS teams in this one.
Okay.
Inter Miami, LAFC, Seattle Sounders.
Inter Miami. You know a place for them, right? Don't you?
Okay. Messi.
Yep. All right.
There you go. The pick. They are here because FIFA wanted Messi in the tournament.
Yes, I would imagine that's
and
their...
Suarez. And
they figured out a way.
Oh. All right. What is your pick in each of these two?
All right. So Club World Cup, I would encourage a lot of caution because we don't know how serious all these clubs are going to take it. So I'm not diving too deep on this, but I like one play before the tournament. South American team to win at plus 900. Now we have four Brazilian clubs and two Argentine clubs. And the main reasons I like this play, obviously the bigger clubs that the casual fan, even casual soccer fans heard of, are from Europe, your Bayern Munichs, your PSGs, etc. But this is in the Americas, so the climate is much hotter than Europe. So the South American teams are used to it. And Brazil teams especially, they are in the middle of their season. They're a spring to fall season, unlike the European clubs who just finished and we don't know how serious or et cetera they're going to be. So I like South American team to win one way or the other at plus 900 here.
9-1, South American team to win it. And
yeah,
then the
we'll take our shot.
The Gold Cup, are you fading the USA here in a group game?
I am. The U.S. has really been struggling coming in. Saudi Arabia is the invited team. This time they're in the U.S. group. I have Saudi Arabia to win Group D at plus 250. So it's a fate of the U.S. Saudi Arabia has Herve Renard as their coach. He is kind of a tournament specialist of sorts. He won an African title with Zambia a while back and has managed several international teams. So an emotional hedge of sorts, Saudi Arabia plus 250 to win the group.
Paul, appreciate it, man. Enjoy. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Paul Carr, everybody. We'll come back. Are we sure? And more next.
VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget, all day, all weekend, VSiN live from Omaha for the College World Series. We're broadcasting straight from Rocco's, home of the legendary Jello Shot Challenge, with live shows now through Saturday. Catch money moves and follow the money with on-site insight, atmosphere, and best bets for the tournament. For all the coverage and your free College World Series betting guide, head to VSiN.com/CWS. I always look at that and think college, Chicago White Sox. College World Series is what we're talking about. VSiN.com/CWS. Money Moves will be with us, or JVT and Stormy, that is, will be with us here later on the show. Then, of course, they'll broadcast right at the top of next hour. And then follow the money a little later on. Live from Omaha. We get tweets at Beat of the Book. Let me just read Bed in the Woods, who says, his theory is the NBA final games are too spread out. It's hard to get excited about games you have to wait 3 days for. It kills the momentum. Game 5 and 6 is Monday, then Friday? Ridiculous. Is that true? Game 5 is Monday and Game 6 is Friday? I didn't even notice that.
Sounds right.
Is that correct?
I know it's Friday, Monday. Like, we have tonight and then Monday.
We have Friday, Monday, yes.
I completely agree with that statement.
I do. I mean, and we've talked about it.
Yeah, we've talked about it.
We've talked about it ad
nauseam. The amount of time you have off even between the conference finals and the finals is silly.
He's
and
right.
Then...
He's right. It's Monday, Friday. That's insane. That's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It's interminable because, again, if they play a Game 7, it's on June 23rd.
I'm pretty sure hockey sticks to this, right, where it's the... I'm fine with giving an extra day between the travel, right? If you need to take 2 days off because you're traveling, fine. If you're in the same city, just go every other night.
By the way, a couple things before we get to Nick Whalen here, a co-host of Prop Points, because he's got NBA thoughts and NFL thoughts as well. We always like to hear that. That Edmonton comeback, 3-0 deficit... That is the first road team in Stanley Cup final history to rally from a deficit of at least 3 goals and win since the Montreal Canadiens rallied to defeat, are you ready for this, Kelly? The Seattle Metropolitans in overtime in 1919.
Well, that was a quality team. You can't let them get behind and just fall asleep.
Yeah, they were an underachiever.
Yeah.
Yeah, their analytics were better than their performance. And then for Draisaitl, 11th goal, right? Fourth goal in overtime of the playoffs, but 11th goal for this entire postseason. Home teams, by the way, just to put it a different way, home teams with at least a 3-goal lead in the Stanley Cup final, 158-1 before last night's game.
John Rahm currently chipping out of a goalie of some kind. That's the word I'm going to go with.
A goalie?
Yeah, yeah. There's these trenches at Oakmont, and he's just like right in the middle of one. He's fallen off completely. I did live bet him yesterday during first round.
And since you bring that up, so remember how at the beginning of the show when we were trying to update the leaderboard, they were both lagging onto what we actually saw? Did you notice? Did anybody else notice? When it went to overtime yesterday, if you looked at your Yahoo scoreboard or maybe even your ESPN scoreboard, that they all had it 4-3 Edmonton final. So and you knew
when it went to overtime?
It was so if you looked at your at some of the
it's scripted, Gil. It's all scripted.
If you looked at it, they were all like really janky. So this is like a little weird scoreboard thing that happened last night too. So I was just if you hadn't watched the game, you would have thought Edmonton had won a regulation anyway. They went into overtime, but I just thought that was weird also. Let's talk to Nick Whalen, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He's the co-host of Prop Points here on the network. Which takes place 2 hours after our finish here. So it's us, then it's money. It's by the books, then it's us on a numbers game, then it's Money Moves, and then, of course, it's Prop Points with Nick and crew. How you doing, Nick? What's happening, man?
Doing well, guys. Doing well. Good to be back. Always love hanging out with you guys, especially on a Friday morning, heading into a big weekend. Got a golf outing up in the Green Bay area tomorrow. So fired up to be here, fired up to do our show and talk a little NBA.
Let's talk a little NBA first, because I know you have some football thoughts as well. Which way are you going tonight? Kelly and I are not completely oppo. I'm taking the points. He's got OKC on the money line, total at 228 once again.
You know, I would love to just hang on to my belief that OKC is the significantly better team. That's what, you know, the vast majority of the sample, including the regular season, has told us. I mean, even the numbers at the book right now, OKC minus 220 still to win this series, despite trailing 2-1. I would love to feel like I could confidently trust the Thunder to bounce back tonight, but honestly, guys, Game 3 to me was alarming, I think, in a lot of ways. You know, more so defensively than anything else for OKC, which I can't believe I'm saying, because I think that was kind of the more reliable side of the ball for this team. But you know, I thought going into this series, if Indiana was going to win, you know, more than one game, they were going to have some of these aberration shooting nights, you know, right? A night where you hit 18 three-pointers, similar to what they did in Game 1. And it's not like Indiana did that whatsoever in Game 3. It's like, yeah, you're probably not getting 27 points again from Ben Mathurin off the bench, but the Pacers went 9 of 27 from beyond the arc and still won this game relatively comfortably. You know, OKC just got straight up beat. You know, I think we saw for one of the few times this postseason what this offense can look like if you do a good job slowing down SGA. And all of a sudden it goes from all these role players that we really like to you know, if you need to ask those guys to give you more than 7, 8, 9 points off the bench, Caruso, Dort, you know, guys like Cason Wallace, all of a sudden it felt to me like OKC felt thin on the offensive end. So pressure is now on OKC. I expect the Thunder to respond. I would rather just play OKC on the money line, though, than mess around with the points right now, especially with how Indiana is closing these games. I mean, they're something like plus 37, I think, in terms of scoring in the fourth quarter alone. Obviously, they've been doing that throughout the postseason, and it doesn't seem like a trend that's going to reverse even against this great OKC team.
Do you agree with us that tonight is the de facto NBA championship game, that whoever wins tonight wins the series?
I think that's reasonable. Yeah, I think that's reasonable. You know, if OKC wins, obviously, you know, you're sending it back to Oklahoma City. It's 2-2 at that point. The momentum is back on your side. We'd see a huge jump in the series price. And yeah, I mean, it's conceivable to me that the Pacers could blow a 3-1 lead. But I think with the level of confidence that this team is playing with, I don't think they would do that. So yeah, I think, you know, that's kind of it's a first takey way maybe to look at this game. But I think it's accurate. I think it's accurate. And again, the Pacers are the team to me that has played with more confidence so far in this series. Like, they are beating, guys, they're beating OKC at their own game. They forced 19 turnovers in game three, scored 21 points off of those turnovers, 17 fast break points, 20 points in the long two range, which is really where guys like SGA and Jalen Williams tend to operate. And instead, you know, it's been Halliburton and Nembhard and Ben Mathurin. And again, we have to give a lot of credit to the Pacers defense. You know, the way Nembhard was harassing SGA in game three, they're giving up nothing easy in the paint, around the rim. And of course, you know, the bench continues to be an advantage for the Pacers as well. 49 bench points in game three.
Yeah, I mean, you could say that, I guess, for any number of game fours where the series is 2-1. But I do feel like the way that this one breaks down, it really feels that way. To the NFL, it is still June, mid-June, but it's never too early to talk NFL. What are some of your bets that you've made here?
Well, I don't throw a whole lot of things in too early, right? We talk about plenty of options over on our show. I don't love the player futures market just because of how much injuries can weigh on that. But one thing that I've been trumpeting on our show, on other shows, is you guys know I'm an AFC South guy, despite living in NFC North territory. I am a Jaguars fan. I'm not ready to fully buy in on this Jags team. And I still look at the Houston Texans right now as the team to beat in that division. You know, obviously, you have some questions about the offensive line after parting ways with Laremy Tunsil, but I think they've found ways to kind of mitigate some of the injuries in that wide receiver core that completely sunk the passing game midway through last season. You know, you bring in two talented rookies, you add a veteran in Christian Kirk. I think the offense essentially bottomed out last season, and that's as bad as it's probably ever going to look with CJ Stroud at the helm, and they still won the division by 2 games. And, you know, it's the AFC South, guys. 9 wins might take it. I'm not saying Houston's going to come out and win 12 or 13 games, but I still think this is the best coach team in the division. I think they have the best quarterback in the division. They might have the best defense in the division. And look, if you like Jacksonville at plus 260, there's a lot of wish casting there, you know, and I have learned better with this franchise, even though I like Liam Cohen. You know, I think this team is moving in the right direction. I don't know that we're going to see a massive year one turnaround for the Jaguars to the point where they're winning this division. And look, hard to get excited about the Colts right now. Titans are in a rebuild. I think getting Houston at plus money right now to win the South is a deal.
Wish casting. I like that. Anything else, or I have another NFL question for you if you don't have another bet. Do you have another bet besides that one?
Nothing that's really top of mind, so hit me with your question.
My question is this, and I ask this of a number of things. What's the off-field narrative in this NFL offseason? What's the off-season narrative that you're hearing, you know, sort of anecdotally that you've heard more than one or two places where you're like, I don't know why this is a thing and I'm not buying into it?
Oh, that's a very good question. I've been skeptical of New England to some degree. And, you know, this is more, it's kind of a mix of on and off field, I guess. You know, Stephon Diggs makes this more of an off field issue, but I think there's just this general upswell of, all right, the Patriots are back. They got Mike Vrabel. They have a star quarterback all of a sudden in Drake May. Just because you go shopping in free agency and spend a bunch of money, and you know, some of the analysts say you had a great draft, I want to see that in practice before I fully buy in. You know, I'm not running to the window to play the over 8.5 wins on New England. I still think, you know, obviously Buffalo is by far the best team in that division. I want to see it before I believe it with the New England Patriots. And, you know, our producer on Prop Points, Michael Cohen, doesn't like when I say that on air because he is in the bag for this Pats team. But That is something that I'm tracking very closely, is the expectation versus results as we get closer to training camp for New England, because we've seen some encouraging things. It feels like this team is moving in the right direction. I'm not fully buying in on that quite yet.
Real quick, Nick, Giannis plays in what city next year?
Milwaukee, Wisconsin, baby. He's staying.
Nick Whalen, wish casting for Giannis. Prop points, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, each and every weekday here at the network. Coming back.